Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
When I took her to be with her dad, and we met her dad and her sister in the parking lot, when she went up and hugged her dad and her little sister, it made me feel so good because I knew she was safe and she was going home where she belonged. And that picture is stuck forever in my mind. And we stayed in touch while she was out in Illinois, and she seemed to be doing really good. And I don't know what made her decide to come back. I don't know. She was young, but she hasn't experienced life, and I knew that she would go back to him, you know, after being with an abuser myself. You know, statistics show that, you know, you leave a total of 8 times before you finally leave in a body bag or you make it out.
Rumor has it he has people too scared to talk.
I lay there at night and I think, God, what if, you know? Or is she still alive? Is he torturing her, you know? I mean, that's enough to just drive a person crazy.
I know who she was with last. I did my own investigating before the police would even touch it. I keep asking, why aren't you searching the house? They tell me that just because she was with him last doesn't give him probable cause to search the house. Which makes no sense to me at all.
Hello, and welcome to episode 48 of The Vanished. November 30th, 2015 was the last time that anyone heard from 21-year-old Megan Fogelsong. She sent a Facebook message to a friend that day saying that she was back at her boyfriend's house in Alden, Kansas. No one has heard from her since, and no trace of Megan has ever been found. This is Megan's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. Everyone knows that finding the perfect t-shirt can be a challenge. I've always had problems whether it was with the fit or quality. Luckily, the perfect t-shirt does exist and you can find it at Skims. From cropped silhouettes to long-sleeve layering tees, there's a style for everyone. You know that I've been wearing Skims for a long time, and recently tried one of their t-shirts. It's the best-fitting tee I've ever worn. Skims makes the best basics and foundations. I got the boyfriend t-shirt in Onyx, and it's so soft and comfortable. I want to wear it every day. It literally fits like a dream. Shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com, now available in sizes extra extra small to 4X. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know I sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select my show in the drop-down menu that follows. I had the pleasure of speaking with Megan's stepmom, Dawn, for this episode. She has been searching for Megan for almost a year now and has done a lot of investigating on her own. She's not giving up the hope of one day finding Megan and bringing her home. Dawn lives in Illinois, which has made searching for Megan more difficult because there is quite a distance between where Megan went missing in Kansas and their home in Illinois. She explained to me how Megan ended up moving back and forth between the two states.
She lived in Kansas when she was little. I'm her stepmom, and her dad's family's here in Illinois, and when they were together. He lived in Kansas with her. And then when they split up, he came back to Illinois. And then when she was, I think she was 6 or 7 when they got a divorce. 6, I think it was. And then when she was 9, she came here and lived with us until after high school. So her mom is still out there.
Nathan got in touch with Megan's childhood friend, Brittany, who gave us a little bit more information about Megan.
Well, her and my sister are like really good friends. And I used to grew up playing softball with her, stayed at her house like every weekend, was always with them. She was very talented. She was really nice, always smiling. She loved hunting, loved playing softball. She was just always an all-in-out good person.
So you would say she had a happy childhood?
Yeah, she had a great childhood.
Like many young people, Megan had gone through some rough patches in her life. While she was in Kansas, her biological mother introduced her to a man named David. Megan and David became romantically involved and went on to have a very rocky, on-again, off-again relationship. The more that I learned about this relationship, the more shocked and concerned I became. In December of 2014, the following information was posted on thegreatbenpost.com. I am withholding the boyfriend's last name. At 5:06 p.m. at 464 Southeast 110 Avenue, there was a report of David kidnapping his ex-girlfriend Megan against her will, and they were en route to Alden. Advised the subject had taken her before at gunpoint and placed her in a straitjacket and threatened to beat her. They questioned her in front of him, and she told the police that she was okay. Dawn told me that this upset her so much because Megan would have been too afraid to tell the truth in front of her abuser. Dawn was so concerned after hearing about this incident that she began having the police do daily welfare checks on Megan. One of the people that we spoke with for this episode is Angie, and she met Megan around the time of this incident. Angie is an incredibly kind and nurturing woman who reached out to help. She is a survivor herself and did what she could.
How I met Megan was kind of under bad circumstances. We had a mutual friend, and I guess she had finally gotten away from her boyfriend, the one that was beating on her, and he knew I had gone through some things like that in the past, and she wouldn't talk to anybody, and so he called me, asked me if I would come out there and talk to her, and I got out there, and, you know, she opened up a little bit, but she was pretty frightened. We wanted to just get her back to Illinois to her family, so I brought her back to my house. We got her cleaned up. She just looked like she had, you know, you could tell she'd been crying. She just, I don't know how to explain. She just came and she took a shower because, and I told her, you know, we're in for a long ride, honey. Because to meet her dad was, I think it took both of us 6 hours to meet halfway. And she just took a shower and she had some pretty good marks on her. And she ate something and she looked like she hadn't eaten for a while. And so she ate something and then we took off and we had a lot of laughs and we cried a lot and I really thought that maybe sharing some of my stories with her would make her know the importance of not going back. And that's how I met Megan, was through that. That was 2014. When I took her to be with her dad, and we met her dad and her sister in the parking lot, when she went up and hugged her dad and her little sister, it made me feel so good because I knew she was safe and she was going home where she belonged. And that picture is stuck forever in my mind. And we stayed in touch while she was out in Illinois, and she seemed to be doing really good. And I don't know what made her decide to come back. I don't know. She was young. I don't know. She has an experienced life, and I knew that she would go back to him, you know, after being with an abuser myself. You know, statistics show that, you know, you leave a total of 8 times before you finally leave in a body bag or you make it out.
When someone goes missing, the loved ones that they leave behind often work together to try to piece together little clues or bits of information that they each have. Megan told different people little pieces of information, and once you put them all together, it paints a picture of the abuse that she had endured. Dawn told me about what she learned from Megan when she came back home in 2014.
Well, she came back here and stayed with us at one point in time. It was December of 14. She came back here and stayed for 6 months. And when her dad picked her up and brought her back here, she told me, that she left because the boyfriend said they were going to the river, but she was not allowed to tell anybody where she was going, so it scared her and she left. Which the Dr. Phil producer was like, did you ever see any marks? I said, lady, I'm in Illinois. She was with him in Kansas. Well, when she came back, did you see anything? I was like, no, I didn't strip her and look. I was like, I'm just going by what she's told me and what she's told people out there.
Megan's friend Brittany saw Megan after she returned to Illinois and said that everything seemed to be fine with Megan. Nothing was out of the ordinary. Unfortunately, Megan did end up going back to Kansas and the abusive relationship that she had escaped just 6 months earlier. Dawn told me about the last time she ever spoke with Megan.
Her friends helped her buy a new phone, and she called me with the new number. And, well, it was one of those things where she would leave him frequently. And the last time that she called me was the day before Thanksgiving, and she had stated that she had left him. He was in jail for driving on a suspended license. So he was getting out of jail that day. So she called me and said that she had left him. And something about she was with friends, which we've talked to them. We found out who she was with. She was with friends, and that she said that she had left because she was scared of something at the house. One minute she was telling me how wonderful he is, and the next minute she was scared to death.
Angie talked about her communications with Megan after she returned to Kansas.
She had called me and told me that she was back and was out at her mom's and wanted me to come visit her, and I had moved away from where I lived at the time, and I was like, well, I'm hours away from you. And so I didn't get a chance to see her, and I wished I would have. We text a lot, and then all of a sudden, just nothing.
Angie told Nathan about the last text that she had received from Megan and the feelings of regret that she has been left with.
That she was walking in the rain, and she wanted to know if I could come and pick her up. And that is when I was living. I moved away, and I wished I would have went and picked her up.
When was that sent? When did you receive that?
I want to say late November.
For all you know, that could have been the day, huh?
I don't know. I hope to not think so. That's what the woulda, coulda, shoulda. You know, I should have hopped in my car when she told me that she was over, you know, in that town and was walking around in the rain, and I should have jumped in my car. I wished I would have. I wished I would have picked her up, and I didn't. If I would have, she'd still be here today, I'm sure.
When Dawn did not hear from Megan and she noticed that Megan was not posting anything on Facebook, she started doing some investigating.
I hacked her Facebook page. On November 30th, she had messaged a girl out there saying that she was back at the boyfriend's house. That was the last day of actual Facebook activity in the activity log, was November 30th. Even if she was mad at me about something, you know, and was ignoring my messages, I would still see that she was on Facebook. He went to the sheriff and told the sheriff that Megan stole from him. So the sheriff was like, okay, when she comes back, I need to talk to her. Well, that message stated that she was there November 30th. On December 1st, the boyfriend text messaged the sheriff, because they live like right there and it's a real small town. He text messaged the sheriff on December 1st and told the sheriff that they got into a fight and Megan ran off. And then the boyfriend turned around and recanted the story of Megan stealing from him and blamed it on somebody else. They did say, you know, he could have just be blaming it on somebody else to make people think he wasn't mad at her. And I was like, is it normal for him to text message you? He's like, no, usually he calls me.
When Dawn told me about David texting and calling the sheriff, I said, what? That seems like an odd dynamic to me, but Dawn explained to me that Alden is a very small town. I looked it up, and the population of Alden, Kansas is only about 150 people. There was one text that came from Megan's phone after that last Facebook message on the 30th.
The friend she stayed with around Thanksgiving got a text message from her phone December 7th, just strictly saying, I'm okay. But even the friends told police they didn't think it was her. because she wouldn't just say, I'm okay, and leave it at that.
Often, when an adult goes missing, there can be a larger time frame between when they go missing and when they are reported missing. This can vary widely due to different routines that people have. It is usually noticed more quickly when someone lives a structured lifestyle. For example, if they don't show up for work or to pick their child up from school. Due to Megan's lifestyle at the time, no one immediately recognized that she was gone. You heard Dawn say earlier that she became concerned when she noticed Megan not posting on Facebook, since that was really out of character for her. That is when she started poking around online. Angie described how she began to feel like something might be wrong.
I believe that's when I got a hold of her stepmom on Facebook and asked her, hey, you know, did Megan go back to Illinois? Because I haven't, you know, heard nothing from her, and I've been texting her and calling her. And, you know, Meg, like I said, after I took her back to be with her family, we stayed in touch while she was out there, and it just was not like her to not respond back with a text. She just had this spirit about her, and it just felt like her, I don't know. You could tell when Meg was around. She was a funky, spunky girl. I hope to say she is. Just, there was a spirit that was all around her, and you could just feel it. And then all of a sudden, it was kind of like, something's wrong. I mean, you lose contact with somebody that you're in contact with a lot, and then all of a sudden, you know, it just stops.
Megan's friend Brittany lives in Illinois, and she too wondered if Megan was on her way back to Illinois.
Maybe she was just on her way down here, or maybe she just needed a few weeks to, like, get stuff off her brain. I never thought it would take this long for her to come up. Like, we don't know nothing about her case, and it's like no one's doing anything, and we all want answers.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, and you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this, and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished.
Dawn told me a bit more about how she began investigating online and how she was told a bunch of different rumors.
Because, you know, she's clear out there and we're clear out here. And I didn't think nothing of it for a little bit because, you know, she's old enough to do what she wants. But when, you know, Christmas went by and I was posting on her Facebook trying to tell her to get a hold of me, and then her birthday goes by, and then I'm like, something's not right, because she always, I would buy a phone card or something for her for her birthday, and I had a box of stuff for her for Christmas. Still sitting there, and then I started trying to find her myself. I went through all of her Facebook friends and messaged all of them that I seen was out in that area. I was getting back the few that actually answered me, one girl was like, well, I heard that he murdered her. Somebody else said, I heard she ripped off the wrong people. And then somebody else said something about the Mexican mafia. And somebody said hog farm.
As time went on, Dawn's concerns continued to grow. Dawn had to fight to even have Megan reported missing.
I had to fight with the police for a few days before they would even file a report. Because she's an adult and can be missing if she wants to. That's the excuse I got. I have gotten apologies since then for it. The Kansas Missing and Unsolved that made the first flyer, he gave me up the law. And so they can't refuse you. Unless they know where she's at, have yeah. made contact with her and know she's okay, they can't refuse you.
Nathan asked Angie what her first thought was when she found out that no one could locate Megan.
That he had done something to her after some of the things that she had told me that he had done to her. On our trip to take her back to her family, I knew right away he had done something to her, and he was going around telling everyone, well, nobody will have to worry about her again. You know, why would somebody say that? It was pretty extensive abuse. I mean, all forms. I'd rather not share any of that until I don't want to do anything to jeopardize the case if something happens. You know what I mean? Let's just say that it traumatized her. You asked earlier about what makes people go back. It's like you start to feel that that's a norm. You know, if I didn't get beat every day, I felt like it wasn't a normal day. And that's sad that you start to feel that that's a norm, but you do. And you feel that that's what you deserve. And I think she was starting to feel that way, obviously.
How many times have we heard someone who went missing or was murdered foreshadow their own death or disappearance? Dawn heard about some comments that Megan had made prior to her disappearance.
I've had two girls tell me that Megan told them that if she ever came up missing, that he did it.
It seems like a logical place to start in this case would be with Megan's cell phone records. We know that suspicious I'm okay text was sent on December 7th, but her last communication before that was November 30th. Dawn explained to me why she was told that Megan's cell phone records are a dead end.
Police say they tried the warrant for the phone number, but since it was a prepaid phone, they don't keep records, is what they told me. Well, he said they don't keep records past 10 days.
Months after Megan went missing, someone reported that they had seen her in a liquor store back in December. This lead ended up being another dead end.
Yeah, the lady that saw her, her daughter's friends with Megan, so she knew who Megan was. It was actually around Thanksgiving because okay. she was in there with one of the friends that she was staying with at that time. And she just got mixed up between the two holidays.
Shortly after Megan went missing, one of David's friends committed suicide. Dawn explained how this led to a search.
They had heard that maybe he knew about it. Rumor had it that he told people that before he died that he did something terrible and couldn't live with himself. But he'd also been into a fight with his dad at the bar that night, too. His dad owns a big farm, so we have searched around his farm, and it's right by the river, too.
Did they actually search the farm itself?
We searched the ground around it.
Okay.
Like, by the river and all the trees and stuff.
And they've never found any trace, anything of hers or anything like that?
I know the first big search that we did where they had more help and more dogs, anything they found, any piece of clothing or anything, they picked it up and bagged it. Unless it's a clothing item or something that I know for a fact she had, it's hard to say.
One thing that may shock you is that David's home has never been searched. Law enforcement has stated to Dawn that just because her last known location is his house, that does not give them probable cause to search the home.
One time we were out there on a search and I said, can't you just go to his door, knock on his door and ask him just to see what he'll say? Well, we know he's not going to let us. And if we go ask him, that's harassment. And I was like, okay, his dad's right here. Because we've searched his dad's farm too. His dad is right here. We've searched his place several times. You tell me every time you go to his door and ask him if we can come here, that that's harassment. His dog ended up dead. supposedly the dog was sick and he took him out and shot him. We found where the dog's buried, close to his dad's farm.
This case is full of rumors. Dawn has been told so many different stories. We don't even know if Megan actually stole something from David or if he just said that to the police, but someone contacted Dawn and told her this.
When the alleged theft occurred, after he got out of jail, he was with another guy, and this other guy called his ex-wife trying to find Megan, saying something about how David was really pissed off.
If your significant other disappeared, wouldn't you report them missing and participate in searches? David won't even speak to Megan's family.
I tried to talk to him through Facebook when I first was looking for her, and instead of answering me, he just blocked me. And I've been told that he's made comments that she'll never be found and she'll never bother anybody again. And
another strange twist in this case is that KBI has said that her case is possibly linked to another missing persons case. They have not said why they believe this, but I asked Dawn if she had any more information. She said that the other missing person is a man who went missing from that area in May. Supposedly, he hung around the same crowd of people. I did some digging, and the only man that was reported missing in that area is 27-year-old Charles McHenry, who was last seen getting into a black vehicle in Great Bend, Kansas. The date of his disappearance was May 6, 2016. I wish that we knew more about this possible connection, but that information has not been released. Megan's relationships with those around her play such a crucial role in this story. When I was working on this episode, I felt like we needed to delve deeper into these relationships to get a better understanding of what happened to Megan. When you hear about Megan from the people who knew her in Illinois, you get one picture of her in your mind. She is this happy, sweet girl who was a talented softball player. But when you hear from the people who knew her in Kansas, that picture starts to change. You start to see how a troubled relationship with her mother led her to move to Kansas, where she became involved with a bad group of people. If you look at Megan's Facebook page, you will see pictures of Megan and her mother having a great time together in Kansas. But there is a lot more to this story than what you see on Facebook. People often post what they want you to think is going on, when in reality, there is a much deeper backstory. The relationship between Megan and her mother, Pam, was very troubled. She did not talk about this relationship much with her friends in Illinois, at least not the ones that we spoke with. But she did confide in some people and stated that she felt like their relationship was more of a competition. Angie gave us some really good insight into this relationship and how it shaped Megan's life.
Have you met her mother?
No. Her biological mother?
Yeah.
No. And I don't want to meet that woman. I don't really. I mean, she still hangs out with the guy that, you know, did it. And that's not, I mean, how could you, anybody with any motherly instincts, I mean, I've got three daughters, and I tell you, you couldn't keep me from killing him, let alone go hang out with him and have him in your home. I feel she knows something and she's not saying it, and judgment day will come for her on that.
Yeah, it's really bizarre. On Facebook, her things she posts and stuff is struck me as kind of odd for a mother whose daughter is missing.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, I believe that she told the police at first that Megan never even stayed with her. Megan, you know, texted me and called me several times saying and giving me directions to her mom's because she said that's where she was staying. And, but, you know, when I took Megan back to meet her dad, we had a little bit of a talk about her mom. She said that she tried too hard to be like a party friend instead of a mom. And Megan said she'd never really been there for her, you know, in and out, in and out. But she was never a role model. And, you know, then she started to say, well, about her stepmom, you know, how everybody says it about their step-parent is they just don't get along with them and, you know, they try to control their every move. And I told her, I said, you know, I said, Dawn didn't have to step up and be a stepmother to you. You know what I mean? She was there for you and she stepped in and she did the best she could and you got to respect her. She's your dad's wife. And she's your stepmother, and give her a little bit of respect, and I bet you'll get it back. And I think when she got back up there to Illinois, that they had kind of a new fresh start at a relationship. And I know that Megan loved her biological mother, but I know that she found fault in herself because her mother didn't want anything to do. You know what I mean? She didn't want to be a mother, and children tend to blame themselves for that. And she says, you know, she chose drugs and alcohol over being a mother. And I said, well, that's why you need to be more appreciative that you're blessed with Dawn. And I don't know how that woman does it. I really don't.
That's a pretty high level of wisdom for a 22-year-old, you know, that sort of awareness of how people have shaped your life or fallen short in your life.
Yeah, her and I had a lot of things in common, and I think that's why she opened up. And I know our friend, that our mutual friend that had me, you know, called me and had me come get her. I think that's why he called me, is because he knew that, you know, we did have a lot in common. And she opened up, and there were some things I wished I wouldn't have heard, but I'm glad that she told me because it'll help in this investigation.
We know that Megan met her boyfriend through her mother, Pam. You have heard so much about this boyfriend, but who is David? He is truly a mystery man in a way. The only person that we spoke with that even knows David is Pam. If you go to his Facebook page, there are no pictures of him. Megan never told her friends in Illinois about him. Megan frequently posted pictures on Facebook, but never posted a single picture with him. Nathan asked Brittany about this.
Had you ever met her, the boyfriend that she had in Kansas? Did she ever talk about him?
No, I never met him, never heard about him. She really never said one word about him.
Never?
Never.
That seems strange.
It kind of did, but I mean, well, why would she never say nothing about him? Like, usually I would want to show my boyfriend off, like, yeah, this is him, but she never said one word about him.
Is there ever any talk about her being abused by him?
No.
Dawn told me some interesting information that she found in her research based off of a comment that Megan had made prior to her disappearance.
He was in the Marines when he was younger, and him and two buddies were out in a bar, and I guess the two buddies took some guy out and murdered him, and he was originally arrested for it, too. Megan once told me that David told her that he murdered somebody, but his friend was doing time for it. And, you know, because I didn't know if it was true or not, if he was actually connected to another murder or if he was just using it to scare her, but I read the articles and supposedly the two friends left him at one bar and they went to another one and picked this guy up and took him out and beat him to death.
You know that I had to look this up. The story is true, but if you go by the court documents, it does not appear that David was involved in this man's death. Possibly he did use this story as a way to intimidate Megan. We know that control plays a huge role in abusive relationships. David not only used intimidation to control Megan, but Dawn has been told that he has other people too intimidated to speak about Megan's disappearance. Megan did not have a job at the time of her disappearance. Dawn reached out to her former employer to find out why she had left her job.
She worked at the little cafe there in Alden at one point in time, and I talked to the owner. She didn't even work there very long, but she said that Megan quit because of the boyfriend being abusive. And there was many, many times where if she was talking to people on the phone, he would break her phone.
Megan had attempted to leave the relationship on several occasions. We heard about when she went back to Illinois for 6 months. Another time she moved to Arizona with her sister, but she went back to Kansas with David when he showed up in the middle of the night. I know that many of you are wondering why someone would stay in a relationship like this, or why people go back to these kinds of relationships.
Now, having been through an abusive relationship yourself, what is it psychologically that draws people back into that cycle once they've stepped away from it? What is it? What's the attraction or what's the pull?
Well, you know, mine was fear. I have three daughters, and he knew where they were, and he, you know, threatened to do something to them, and anybody that helped me, he threatened to hurt them. And that's one thing I can say was, you know, abusers are men of, well, they could be men or women, but they are people of their word. And the first thing my ex-husband told me was, I can promise you that nobody else will ever hurt you, but I can't promise you that I won't. I went back out of fear, but they also know the right things to say, the right things to do to get you back. They all read the same textbook. I swear it's a textbook. She's young, and she bought into it. And I did several times before I finally ended up in a crisis shelter for a total of nine or 10 months.
So Megan was juggling these two very unhealthy relationships leading up to her disappearance. After several attempts, Nathan was finally able to get Pam on the phone to comment.
Going through her Facebook, I saw a lot of pictures of you two on there.
Yeah.
And fun, looking happy, and so I was kind of.
Yeah, we were having a good time.
So what kind of person was she?
She was wonderful. She was always happy. Everybody loved her.
So she moved back there after high school?
She did. And then she went back to Illinois for a while.
That's where her father lives?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then she had just come out to visit those pictures. That was when she came out to just visit.
And then last November?
It was in the summer.
Okay.
It was the summer before. It was like June.
Gotcha. Was she living in Kansas when she met Nathan? Okay.
Yeah.
So how did you find out about that? How did the news come to you?
Her stepmom. Because we weren't speaking at that time.
Oh, you and Megan weren't?
Yeah, we had our ups and downs. And when she would get out there, she wouldn't talk to me for a while.
So when was the last time?
I think October.
October?
It was right around my birthday.
I mean, obviously it's hard. Obviously it's very hard for anybody to have somebody go missing. What's been the hardest part for you?
Not knowing.
I mean, have the police been helpful?
Not really.
No?
Well, Bryce County, when they were investigating, were pretty in touch. They said KBI took it over a couple months ago, and I haven't heard a word from them.
No? You know why they took over?
No, I don't.
So they told you anything?
No. I saw it on Facebook.
Really?
Yeah.
So when was the last time you had any contact with police?
The last search I went on with them. Oh, my. Probably 3 months ago.
Okay. Oh, so they were still actively searching?
They were, as far as I knew. Yeah.
So are there any leads or anything?
They never informed me of anything. I would hear it through the grapevine.
Then I know the paper said that the police thought she had been a victim of foul play. I was wondering if there was any
I saw that on Facebook. I don't know. I saw that on Facebook, too.
So you're learning everything off of Facebook.
Uh-huh. Pretty much.
So you and the stepmother, what's her name? Dawn? Is that her name?
Dawn. Uh-huh.
You guys get along? You guys communicate?
We do. We speak. Yeah.
Yeah. So coming up on the year anniversary, what are your thoughts?
Somebody knows something. They're just not coming forward. They've got to.
You think it was somebody she knew?
Yeah.
Oh, she was at somebody's house.
Uh-huh.
And then she left?
I guess. As far as I know.
But what about, some people had mentioned a David.
Uh-huh.
Is he a potential suspect in your mind? Seems like a lot of people.
He could be. He could be, but then, I don't know. I've known him for a long time, and they wanted me. The detectives wanted me to continue the friendship, and I have, and I don't. I think it was one of his friends.
One of his friends?
Yeah.
What makes you think that?
Just by the way he acts now.
So he knows something, you think?
Yeah.
Did you still see him?
Huh?
Do you still see him? Do you still hang out with him?
No. He's nobody even knows where he's at now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Have the police ever brought him in for questioning?
As far as I know, they have, yeah.
Okay. Man, that's a tough situation.
Yeah.
Do you think the police could be doing more?
Do I what?
You think the police could be doing more?
Yeah, because I really don't know what they've done.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like if
yeah, it's just
general crowd and
yeah,
they'd be able to do some kind of, where were you something. At, where's your cell phone, something, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
So, and then how are the kids? I understand she had quite a few siblings.
Yeah. My other three are very upset about it. And my oldest has been out from Arizona to help search.
So when you search, how do you really decide to search?
They had Crime Stoppers phone calls and anonymous calls, I guess, and to give them places to go. And they took cadaver dogs out, and we went with them.
Oh, okay. So they're following up on leads.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. At least leads are still coming in.
Yeah, well, this was 3 months ago. I don't know anything since then.
So is the friend of David's, is he still around too, or is he gone as well?
As David, is he still around?
Well, you said David was gone. I was wondering the friend.
No, the friend is. David's still where he's always been.
So the friend is gone. David's still around.
Yeah.
I hear his name every now and then, but I haven't seen him, and I've tried to text the number I had for him, and they won't respond. And
did you ever ask him if he had anything to do with it?
Yeah, he told me that she ran off to Colorado with somebody, and then he wouldn't respond anymore.
You don't buy that, huh?
No.
No, she wasn't. Yeah, most kids just don't run off.
Yeah, and if she did, she would contact someone within a couple months. I mean, it was never this long.
I think that probably covers my questions, unless there's anything else about Megan that you want people to know.
That she's loved, she's missed, and we'd love to find her.
Yeah, I hope you guys do. I really do. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to talk. And
sure, no problem.
Alrighty, bye.
Thank you, bye.
Nathan and I have been reaching out to people on Facebook to try to get more information. I got some information that I had Nathan look into. This is our conversation about that information.
So earlier this week, someone sent me a message on Facebook and gave me some information about the relationship between Pam and David. And all I knew was that this was a rumor. So I gave you that information to see if you could confirm it. And what did you find?
Well, Pam acknowledged that she and David have been involved romantically in the past. You know, for certain that she was involved romantically with David prior to Megan arriving in Kansas the first time, and what the status of that relationship was after that, after Megan's arrival, during her stay there, during her return to Illinois, and then when she returns to Kansas. That's pretty vague yet. But we do know that Megan and her mother, in essence, shared a boyfriend.
Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think from an investigative perspective, it certainly raises more questions. And you know that Megan felt that Pam was very competitive with her, not just when it came to men, but in many aspects of her life.
I have a lot of different feelings about that information. I would like to discuss that a little bit more as we move into the theory segment of the show. Before I talk about the specific theories, I would like to briefly mention the timeline of facts that we do know. Megan left David's home on November 25th, which was the day before Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving fell on November 26th that year. She spoke with Dawn that day and told her that she was spending the holiday with friends because David was getting out of jail and she was scared. I was able to confirm David's release date as November 25th as well. She also texted Angie around this time asking for a ride because she was walking in the rain. The next communication that we have from Megan is November 30th. That was a Facebook message from her to one of her friends that she had stayed with over the holiday. In the message, she said that she was back at David's house. Also on the 30th, David sent a text message to the undersheriff saying that Megan had stolen from him. The following day, David again messaged the undersheriff and said that he and Megan got into a fight and she ran off. The only known communication from her phone after this point is a text to one of her friends on December 7th that simply said, "I'm okay." We do not know if this text was actually sent by Megan. Several of the theories that I have heard during this investigation have come from David himself. He shaped the story from the beginning by texting the sheriff to say that she took off. Pam thinks that she took off with a friend of David's, but she did not really offer any information to support that theory. I feel like her relationship with David leads me to question her thoughts about David because there could be some bias there. Also, I wonder if he could be manipulating that situation with her just like he manipulated Megan. Nathan asked Angie if she thought Megan would take off and not contact anyone for this long.
I spoke with her mother a couple of days ago, and she said somebody had told her she ran off to Colorado with the guy.
That's not like Megan. No, that's not. I think that's something that he got going around. In fact, I believe he's the one that got that rumor going. That's not like her. That's not like her at all. Or her to be, not stay in contact with him. If she was still alive and able to, she would contact someone. There's never been this amount of time, this length of time between, any contact with her.
I asked Dawn the same question.
Usually she would call me somewhere, and she was a very sociable person. She was always on Facebook, always on the phone. I think she would have at least say, hey, I'm okay, or whatever. She didn't always tell me where she was, but she would say, just call or text or Facebook.
Another theory that David has tossed out there is that the Mexican cartel took Megan. I think this theory is kind of silly, and there is nothing to suggest that this is the case. Dawn spoke to both law enforcement and a private investigator about this theory, and neither of them thought that this was a likely answer. Most of the people that we spoke with felt like everything points to her boyfriend, David. This case had been handled by the Rice County Sheriff's Department for many months. This is a very small department with limited resources. Undersheriff Brian Treister was the one investigating. This is also the person that David had been texting around the time that Megan disappeared. He also happens to be one of David's neighbors. We reached out to get a comment from him, but he never wrote back or returned any of our phone calls. I don't know if they didn't get very far with Megan's case because of the limited resources, or if there is some kind of bias there due to the pre-existing relationships. Angie told Nathan about her experiences with the sheriff's department.
It was through text messages with the sheriff now, and I'm the only one that she opened up to and told me all the, you know, I got her away from him the first time, and I figured that they would have been interviewing me, and I never got interviewed. And it, like I said, basically everything was done through text, and I just felt that that's not appropriate way to handle a case like this, or any case for that matter. I feel that had KBI not stepped up, that it probably would have been a cold case.
So have KBI investigators spoken with you?
In fact, I had an interview yesterday. He came to my home, and I told him everything that I knew.
So there's
some things I believe weren't relayed from the county that's working the case. They weren't relayed to him. There was a few things.
So there's some real movement on the case now.
Yes. And, I mean, he's all about face-to-face interviews. As to where, like I said, I've never even met the sheriff of the county. That, you know, nobody has even come to interview me. It's all been through text messages. And that just seems odd.
Yeah, you can't do an investigation through text messaging.
No, not at all. I mean, I would at least want to see the person face-to-face, you know, or just having a written statement even. I mean, usually they want a written statement. He was fine with just text messages, and there were some things he probably shouldn't have told me. You know, it's just poor judgment all the way around on their part, and I'm glad that KBI has stepped up.
This case was recently turned over to KBI. We reached out to the detective, and he told us to contact their media relations department, which we did. They promised us a statement by Friday, but they never got back to us. I am hoping that they will eventually get back to us. One interesting point to note is that law enforcement officials have stated that they suspect foul play is involved in this case. My hope is that KBI will be able to find Megan and bring her home. If you have any information about the disappearance of Megan Fogelsong, please contact KBI at 785-296-8200. If you are a victim of domestic violence, the National Domestic Violence Hotline is available 24/7. You can call 1-800-799-7233 for help. Their website is thehotline.org, and you can also go on their website and chat with someone. That website is also a great resource for friends and family members. Again, that is thehotline.org.
Well, like I said, she had the spirit about her, and I don't feel that anymore. And my gut's telling me that she's no longer with us, that she needs to be brought home and put to rest with her family. They need that closure. We all need that closure. We just need her to be found. I've prayed for the best from the get-go, and the longer it's been, I'm expecting the worst. I'm prepared for the worst, but we just need some closure. We need her home. She needs to be put to rest. And whoever knows anything about any of this, may they pay on Judgment Day, because there's such things as, you know, call the anonymous hotline, and somebody knows something more than just the person that did it. And she's alive. She never even got to experience being a mother. She never got to experience being a wife. She never got to experience life. She's only 22. But my gut tells me that she's gone. I having been through all of that myself, I know that when people say, why didn't you just leave, you know, you have to know that you are strong enough, that you're not the people, that you're not the person that your abuser says you are. You're not, that you can make it without them. And if you get away and you can get away safely, do, because some people aren't so fortunate, and I fear my friend Megan wasn't. Crisis centers, the crisis advocates, they are hidden angels, and I never knew about crisis centers until I had to be in one and go to them. They are very resourceful people, and they, I don't even know how to say it, they just, they do their job well. And don't, I understand fear's a big factor. And when you leave and when you start to feel that life is a norm, but that's not a normal way to live. And it took me a few years to get back into the routine of not saying I'm sorry every time somebody would say something. And that's not a normal way of life. And that there is a different life out there than that. And Megan deserved better. I deserved better. Anybody who's being abused deserves better.
Yeah.
I tell you, when I started the page, I'm the one who started the Facebook page, Bring Megan Home, and I get on there and I look at it, and because I got her stepmom to where she's the one that can, you know, answer all the questions, and she's the editor and everything on it. I'm just the one that made the page. But I get on there and I look at all the people that have looked at that and all the people that have shared that, and not one tip, you know, it just, and somebody out there has to know something. And there's, like I said, there's anonymous hotlines, you know, call them. Don't, this is somebody's daughter, somebody's granddaughter, somebody's sister. You know, I see posts from her grandmother on there every day, send her granddaughter home, you know. They just need to know where she is, and she just needs to be brought home. And there's somebody that knows. And it's sad that we've had to pretty much rely on psychics for the majority, you know, of information on where to look, but when you've got no help from law enforcement until now, that's somebody could have been going, who knows? If somebody would have stepped up when she first came up missing, she could still be here. I hope she is still here, but my gut tells me she's not. But if somebody would have stepped up, they could have saved a life. Still having some problems of my own with, you know, things that I've went through. And he just got out of prison last month. He's been in for 10 years.
Oh, wow.
So and I've been dealing with that. And I think that's why this all hit home so hard with me, is I feel like I should have shared more with her about what he had done to me, to just really stress the importance of this is the end result, you know. I'm lucky I got away. And some people aren't so fortunate. I had to have a surgery on my face because my, you know, jaw and cheek were broke, both of them. And so my parents changed a little bit. And I don't know, it changes a person, everything about them. And nobody should have that right to take that from somebody.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients, popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.